Welcome to the Three Creeks Church Podcast. We're a church in Gahanna, Ohio that exists to help people find and follow God. We hope this message encourages you, challenges you, and helps you discover how much God really loves you.
What's up? Good morning. My name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here at Three Creeks Church, and I'm just thrilled that you're here. You could be anywhere. You've chosen to be here, and for that, I'm thankful. And as you were walking into church, you saw a trailer, and a bunch of you guys had your trash bags or your lawn bags, and they were just full of clothes. And for those of you guys that donated your clothes today, I just want to say thank you so much. If you walked in and thought, oh, shoot, that was today, there's still time. Mackenzie is nicer than me. So I went out there and I said, Mackenzie, this is the only time we're taking clothes, right? And she says, well, if they want to drop them off tonight or tomorrow night at the well between 6:30 and 8, I will accept them. So you can thank Mackenzie for her kindness and generosity. If it was my way, I'd say your clothes are with you for another year. But man, I was talking to somebody yesterday. I just got to tell you that they were saying, you know, yeah, I'm going to come drop off my clothes. And I said, oh, that's awesome. And this person said, and she does not want to be named. And you'll, you know, for good reason, I think. Like, she's such a humble person. She just said, you know, I took what you said a couple weeks ago, and I actually gave my favorite piece of clothing. And I thought, man, that is elite level walking in the way of love. Thinking about others first. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I put in the clothes that didn't fit anymore. And I put in the clothes that I don't like to wear anymore and hope somebody else would like them. But this person said, you know what? I love this so much, but it will be a blessing to somebody else. And as an act of faith, this person stepped in and said, I'm going to be obedient to what God's telling me to do. And man, that encouraged my spirit, and I wanted to share it with you too. The thrift shop is on Saturday. And I'm fired up about the families that are going to get to come and be blessed by that. All right, here we go. Have you ever heard of the Sermon on the Mount? It's the most famous sermon of all time, for sure. It's the most quoted sermon of all time. It definitely is the most life-changing sermon of all time. And I think it's fair to say that it was the best sermon ever preached by the greatest preacher who ever lived, that being Jesus. In fact, when Gandhi was reading and studying the Sermon on the Mount, this is what he said about the Sermon on the Mount. Gandhi didn't believe in Jesus, but as it relates to the problems between his country, India, and the country of Great Britain, this is what Gandhi said. He said, "When your country and mine shall get together on the teachings laid down by Christ in his Sermon on the Mount, we shall have solved the problems not only of our countries, but those of the whole world." Matthew chapter 5, Matthew chapter 6, Matthew chapter 7. If you've got one of those Bibles that puts the words of Jesus in red ink, it's all red. Because this is the sermon that Jesus gave called the Sermon on the Mount. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what mount? I'm glad you asked. Matthew chapter 5, verse 1 and 2, it says this, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down." And I got to tell you, this Greek word of mountainside is the word oros, which could be translated mountain or mountainside or mount or hill. And I got to be honest, I'm not really in agreement with the English speakers who gave this sermon the nickname Sermon on the Mount, because I think it's more appropriately titled perhaps the Sermon on the Hill. Because this is the hill that Jesus was on. These are the shores of the Sea of Galilee. You can call that a mount if you want to. You're probably the same person that calls it Mad River Mountain. But to me, it's a medium-sized hill. And this is outside of a city called Capernaum. And crowds were gathering around Jesus. And you might be wondering to yourself, if you know the story, you go, why are crowds gathering around Jesus? He's not rich. He's not powerful. He holds no political position. He doesn't have an army. He doesn't have a castle. He doesn't come from a noteworthy family. He's a carpenter from Nazareth. Why are people following Jesus? Well, the few verses before what I just read you about how the crowd was following him to the mount, this is what it says. Matthew chapter 4, verses 23 through 25. It says, Jesus went through Galilee, which is kind of like a county, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, that's important, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. News about him spread all over Syria, and people brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, those suffering from severe pain, the demon-possessed, those having seizures, the paralyzed, and he healed them. And large crowds from Galilee, the Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan. I mean, people from everywhere started following him. We're talking about at least hundreds, likely thousands of people at this point following Jesus because he was healing people. Now, if I told you that somebody was going to be traveling through Columbus, a traveling preacher who had the power to heal people, I don't think you'd go because I wouldn't go because I'd be like, that sounds kind of weird to me. I would be a little skeptical. Even if someone showed me a video, I'd say, I'll bet you those people were planted there. I'd say, I'll bet you that was AI generated. No thanks. That would be my response, and I can't imagine I'm the only one who would be a little skeptical of a traveling, healing preacher. But if I had a friend, or if you had a friend who had been paralyzed for a decade and who had to roll around in a wheelchair for as long as you've known this person, and that person went to this healing service and was literally healed to the point of the next time you saw your trusted friend, somebody that you know, walking, he had actually been healed. You got to tell me, man, you'd probably show up at the next one. And if you wouldn't, you're not in your mid-30s where like half your body's like, I could use a little bit of healing on this thing. If you trusted an eyewitness to what had happened, a miracle in somebody's life, you would probably show up. And so that's what's happening here. Of course, there's a little bit of skepticism. They've heard about some traveling preachers before, but man, the word is getting out that this is actually happening. This is the real deal. And so thousands of people are following Jesus. What does Jesus do next? He sits down. And you might think, well, that's a little odd. It feels like the speaker should stand up. It feels like the people should sit down. But when a rabbi, a teacher, was going to speak with authority, he would sit down. Think about this. What do you call the person who leads the faculty of a certain department at a university? The chair. Yeah. What do you call the person that leads the board? The chairperson of the board. When the Pope speaks out about things related to morals or faith, and it's even considered infallible. I don't know if I agree with that, but man, the term that's used is ex cathedra, which literally means from the chair. And so you see historically when people in authoritative positions, when they're going to sit down and they're going to teach people, the teacher sits down and the people stand up. I thought about trying it, but you look comfy, so we'll leave it like this. But this is what happens. And then the disciples, it says in verse 2, the disciples came to him and he began to teach them. So it's important to note that Jesus is actually speaking to his followers, but he's doing it in the earshot of the crowd. I already told you I didn't love Sermon on the Mount, but Sermon on the Hill doesn't have the same ring to it either. So I came up with another favorite way to describe the Sermon on the Mount. Here's a new nickname for you. It's, for me, the sermon from the monarch. It's a sermon from the king. Because the Sermon on the Mount is a message from a king about kingdom living to kingdom citizens. You see, there's a hope growing in the hearts of the crowd. There's this anticipation. For a long time, these Jews have been oppressed. And at this point in time, they're being oppressed by Rome. Rome is taxing them. Rome is oppressing them. And they're looking at Jesus and they're going, wait a minute. Some of what he's doing is lining up with what we've heard this deliverer will look like. Could he be him? Could he be the deliverer? Could he be the conquering king that frees us from the oppression of Rome? There's also a little bit of confusion because they're going, wait a minute, this guy doesn't have an army. He doesn't have any weapons. He doesn't own any castles. Jesus is going to talk a lot about a kingdom here. And it's going to simultaneously grow this anticipation in their hearts, but also increase this confusion in their hearts because this kingdom, Jesus is going to say, man, this kingdom looks so different than what you think it's going to look like. It is going to be upside down to what you think it should look like. And he doesn't wait until the end of the sermon to tell him that. He doesn't have this big, long talk that captures their attention at the end, throws them a curveball and says, oh, this is actually what the kingdom's really like. Man, he opens with it. He opens with a description of the upside down kingdom. This is what he says. The disciples come in, the crowds can hear. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Front guy, a guy in the front is taking notes and he's saying, what is this guy talking about? That isn't how I would have started if it was me trying to talk about the blessed life. You'll obviously notice 8 times there the word blessed. It's the Greek word makarios, and the most simple way to translate it into English for us is happy. So you could even say, Jesus is saying that, he's saying, oh, how happy are the poor in spirit. Oh, how happy are those who mourn. Oh, how happy are the meek. How fortunate. It brings to mind this idea of inward contentment, this full, deep satisfaction of the soul. Happy, blessed, fortunate, blissful are the poor in spirit. And what Jesus is saying right out the gate is that happiness isn't found where you naturally or tend naturally inclined to look for it. He's saying everything that we think will make us happy, we ought to pause, because Jesus is about to contradict it. In the Bible, God has a lot to say about happiness. Believe it or not, he invented it. He created our brains with pleasure receptors. He created dopamine. He created happiness. He wants us to experience happiness. And so the question is, well, then how do we get it? How do we get happy? How do we get blessed? If you type into Google, how to be, it will finish your sentence, happy. That is the number one most searched how to be word, because we all just want to be happy. We all want to be blessed. We all want to be fortunate. We all want to be shown favor. Where do we get happiness? And you might be thinking, this is probably the point in the sermon where the pastor's going to say, Jesus. Because the answer is always Jesus, right? Which reminds me of a story that I heard about a Sunday school teacher that was trying to teach these children about prepared workers. And she was trying to use a squirrel as an example of a prepared worker. And so she was sitting in front of these first graders and she said, okay, I'm going to describe something. Raise your hand if you know what I mean. And she says, this thing lives in a tree and it likes to eat acorns. Nobody raises their hand. She goes, it's gray and it has a fluffy tail. And the first grader raises his hand and goes, man, it sounds a lot like a squirrel, but it's got to be Jesus. Because the answer is always Jesus. No. When these people are sitting underneath the feet of Jesus and he starts talking about being blessed, about makarios, about being happy, they're going, wait, what? This doesn't sound like a feel-good TED Talk speech. This doesn't sound like what my heart says will make me happy. This sounds different. This is important to note, and I'm going to jump into the first one specifically here in about 2 or 3 more minutes, I think, but this is important to know for us as we go through this whole series. You can lump the first 8 parts of the sentences, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the peacemakers. You can lump those together. And then you can lump the second half together too. They will inherit the earth. They will see God. They will be shown mercy. They will be comforted. You can lump them all together. It's not like there's one list over here and then you have to draw the line to connect the other one over here. They don't correlate this one and this one and then this one and this one. It's all of these and all of these. One commentator wrote that you could actually rewrite this, how Jesus meant it, by saying, he would say, blessed are the poor in spirit, and those who mourn, and the meek, and those who hunger and thirst, because they will be comforted, and they will see God, and they will be called children of God. So you can kind of lump them all together. And I was trying to think of how to explain this, and I thought, man, if me and you went out to dinner with six of our friends, and there were eight of us sitting around this table, and we went to this restaurant, we walked in, and there was a table set aside for us, had a little reserve sign on there, and we all sat down, we all took our chairs, the waiter comes up, says, what can I get you guys to drink? And we're poor, so we all order water. And then the waiter walks away and says, I'll come back and I'll bring you some water. You guys just hang out. But he doesn't give us a menu. You might look at me and say, have you been to this restaurant before? I said, oh yeah, I've been here before. He said, well, are they going to give us the menu? I said, no, there's no menu here. And he says, what? I said, oh, this is like it's served family style. Like a lot of times you go to another restaurant and you can order the pad thai and I can order the pizza and he can order the sandwich. But the way it works at this restaurant is that all the food comes for all eight of us. We all get to share all of it. And so when you think of the Beatitudes and you look at all eight of them listed out, think about how like all eight get all eight. You can actually lump them all together. It's served family style, if you will, the Beatitudes are. But today, let's just do one because we are mere humans. So let's take them one at a time. It says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Kingdom citizens are poor in spirit. And if you read that, I don't know, if you don't know what that means, I'm inclined to say, ugh, poor in spirit, that doesn't sound very appealing to me. I didn't wake up thinking, sure would love to be poor in spirit today. It feels like my kids thought that, but I didn't wake up thinking that way. It brings to mind Eeyore, somebody who's depressed. Ebenezer Scrooge, somebody who's down, cramping my style. Poor in spirit, somebody just walking around hanging their head all the time. That's what comes to mind without a proper understanding of what it means to be poor in spirit. When I read it at first, I thought, poor in spirit, that's not for me. I'd rather be rich in spirit, or at least middle class in spirit. But let me share what it really means. When Jesus said blessed or happy are the poor in spirit, poor in spirit means that a person is not spiritually proud. To be poor in spirit means that you're not really all that impressed with yourself. You're humble. To be poor in spirit means that we don't believe that God needs us, but we really deeply believe that we need God. When I asked one of my friends this morning, I said, what comes to mind for you when you hear about poor in spirit? He said, less of me, more of him. Less of me, more of him. And maybe if I could just boil it all down to one sentence, it would be this. Being poor in spirit means that you embrace daily dependence on God. You embrace daily dependence on God. So you see, being poor in spirit is not about being depressed, but it is about being dependent on God. And Jesus is saying, if you want to be happy, if you want to feel blessed, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the ones who embrace daily dependence on God. And I just got to ask, I'll just cut to the chase. Are you poor in spirit? Do you believe that you need God's help today? Do you believe that you need God's help this week? And maybe if I could just take it one level further. If you're like, no, if your honest answer is, I think I got this. Let me just ask you one more question. Is there anything that you are currently getting after in your life that is actually prompting you to feel like you need God's help? Or are you just playing it safe? What has God been stirring in you? And he wants you to be brave to say yes, but you're going to need God's help to pull it off. What is that thing that's been on your mind for a couple of weeks or a couple of months or a couple of years? Is there anything that you're attempting that's forcing you to your knees, where you say, I can't pull this off on my own? I would love to just have a quick chat for a few minutes as we close, just about our prayer team that serves down here in what I call the prayer enclaves. And I'm just so thankful for the folks that keep showing up, that keep throwing on the lanyards, that keep being available to pray with you. And there have been times where there's a long line, and most of the time there's not. And I've been thinking about this, and we've had so many discussions over the years. And here's how they go. What if we put the prayer team in the back? What if we turn the lights on up a little bit more? What if we turned the music down a little bit more? What if we put the prayer team in the front? That way that, you know, people can see that they're really there and they're available. What if we, I have an idea. What if we put them on the sides, right in the middle? We won't put them in the back. That's kind of weird, behind the curtain. We won't put them in the front because, you know, it's a little, you don't want everybody to see you. But, like, we put them on the sides. Like, you can kind of see them out of your corner of your eye, but they're not, like, right up in your face. Like, what if we, and then someone said, I got an idea. What if we had the prayer team put on light-up lanyards? Well, I don't know how much those cost, but we could try it. And then I said, you know what I think would help? What if we actually felt like we needed God's help? Like, what if we actually felt like we needed God's help? Like, we were attempting things where we needed God's help. Like, what if we felt that way? What if we didn't feel so self-sufficient? What if we didn't feel like we had it all together? What if we felt poor in spirit? I'll bet you it wouldn't matter if the prayer team was back there, down here, on the sides, or outside. I'll bet you would pray if you felt like you needed God's help. And I'm not trying to say that this is the only place that you can pray or that you never pray. But what I am saying is this, is that if I'm taking the temperature of our prayer life by looking at how many people are coming up to pray with people at church, I'm concerned. And I would venture to say that we are poor in prayer. And I think we're poor in prayer because we're not poor in spirit. I think we're poor in prayer because we're not poor in spirit. And I've had this feeling recently where, man, I don't know if you've noticed, but there have been more people coming to church lately, and we've had a lot of visitors and people joining our church, and we're growing in width, but I'm concerned about growing in width if we're not going to grow in being poor in spirit. Because what are we inviting them into? Hey, come join us. We're pretty comfortable. We feel pretty self-sufficient, but you can join a community group. Is that really what the offer is? I long to be a church that is poor in spirit, that embraces daily dependence on God. I feel like there's this mental image that some of us have, me included, where, like, if somebody steps up in the aisle and walks down, somebody steps in the aisle and walks down, and that there's this big, like, flashing neon sign above their head that says, recently diagnosed with cancer, marriage is falling apart, experiencing a life crisis. I don't know how that became the prerequisite for coming up and needing prayer. There's this subconscious thought that the unhealthy people are coming up here to get prayer, but the truth is that the most healthy spiritual people in the church, the ones who know that they need God's help, are the one coming up here to pray. And so for me, if I see anybody come up here, there's a big sign above their head that's just saying, I need God's help. That's it. I need God's help. And I dream about the day in our church where people come up here and people pray, and then somebody comes up here, and then they end up meeting somebody in the hallway afterwards, and they say, hey, I saw you go up there for prayer. You must have something big going on this week. You got something pretty important going on in your life. And I just dream where we just go, no, it's a pretty regular week, but man, I just know I need God's help. Because if I'm going to walk in the way of love, if I'm going to live in an others-oriented way, if I'm going to love my wife, if I'm going to raise my kids, if I'm going to treat my coworkers, if I'm going to serve my neighbors the same way that Jesus would, man, I am definitely going to need God's help because, man, left up to me, I'm just going to want to do things my way. I need God's help to walk in the way of love. There's no way I can pull this off on my own. So, no, it doesn't feel like it is a big week, but, man, I know I need God's help this week. I know it. This is what it looks like to be poor in spirit. So what we're going to do for this series is we're just going to try to put a couple more people down here. We're going to try to give a little bit more time at the end of the service. We're going to put a reflection question on the screen and just give you time to pray. And let's not overcomplicate this. Let's not over-American church this thing. There's going to be a time where you're going to be sitting there and you're going to be going, man, I do need God's help. I need God's help this week with the situation with my roommate, with the situation with my wife, with the situation with the person that I work with. I need God's help. I need Him to soften my heart. I need Him to soften their heart. I need Him to help me get ready for this. I need grace. I need forgiveness. I need peace. I'm full of anxiety. I need God's help. And you're going to look down here and all the people are going to be taken. They're all going to be full. And you're going to be tempted to say, well, I guess it's not my day for prayer. And man, I don't overcomplicate this and don't American church this thing so much that you miss out. Look to your right, look to your left. And if you see somebody that you know, maybe, I know it sounds crazy, somebody that you don't know. And you just go, man, they're all full down there, but I just know that I need God's help. Will you contend for that with me? Will you go to the Lord with me? Will you pray for me? Because I need God's help. Do you believe you need God's help? Do you really believe that you need Him, that you need His wisdom, that you need His strength, that you need His peace? Man, the blessed life, according to Jesus, starts with knowing deep in our guts that we don't have what it takes on our own, that we can't pull it off, that we need His help. The Bible says over and over that power, God's power is made perfect in weakness, which means that we experience God's power when we're poor in spirit, daily depending on God's help. So here's my closing question. Megan, will you throw that up there? In what area of your life do I really need God's help, or do you really need God's help? I'm just going to let that sit. You're going to get 3 minutes to think about it. We're not going to rush out of here. And the prayer team's going to come down here, and if you'd like to pray with somebody, they're here. And in 3 or 4 minutes, we'll sing a song as we close our service and time together. But man, I just want to be a people that is poor in spirit and that depends on God. Will you pray with me? Lord, as we reflect on this question, by your Spirit, would you fill our minds with the answer? I know the answer is probably different for every person here. Would you personalize it? Would you speak to us? What is it that you want to help us with? Would you give us the courage to ask for it? In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com.